Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We are always glad when you join us. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations, you can do that as well. Phone numbers as follows. Anywhere you can hear us, 800-838-3760 works just fine. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Or you can send an email. That address is jx@jeffnet.org. The beginning of just about any year brings about changes in more than the calendar. New laws passed by state legislatures and even Congress often take effect on January 1st. This year is no different. Under new Oregon law, people seeking their first ever driver's licenses can get a break on the testing regime if they submit to a driver education program. How does that work? Well, for that, we turn to Bill Warner at the Oregon Driver Education Center, where he's the program manager and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about the Oregon Driver Education Center. This is not a state agency, obviously.
Well, actually, I am a state agency. I'm at the Department of Transportation.
You are? Okay.
Yeah, the Education Center is a private drive school that actually is one of our approved providers.
Okay.
But so I do know a lot about them as well. We love all of our approved providers. They go through a lot of preparation to become approved by the state, so we know them intimately. So,
all right. So, I'm glad you separate things out. There's you're with ODOT. ODOT does certify the driver education schools like the Oregon Driver Education Center.
Exactly. Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, tell us about the changes that have happened then.
Well, there have been several changes that, you know, as you said, take effect January 1st. And one of the biggest that are going to immediately impact the teenagers in our state is the working with the Department of Motor Vehicles and Transportation Safety, which is the division where driver education is housed at ODOT. We've come together to realize that the driver education program is so comprehensive and enjoying such good statistics now in reducing fatalities and crashes and citations, that they have decided that we, when we put a student through the program, that they don't necessarily need to repeat with a drive test at DMV. So by the time a student goes through the 30 hours of classroom and 6 hours of behind-the-wheel instruction and takes that school's final drive test with all the assessment that is attached, that the instructors are very, very capable to gauge whether that student can be at least at a minimum standard of proficiency to start their driving career, as it were. And so DMV said, if they take driver education and they actually can pass the test as driver education program has laid it out, then we'll give them a pass on the actual skills test. They still have to take the written test, but they won't have to go down to the field office and take the drive test.
All right, but they have to go still to DMV to get the actual picture and all the other stuff, the full license, right?
Correct, yes. And I think that's important to understand because we still need to have that first line of defense as far as identity, and we need to have somebody official making sure people who are who they say they are.
All right, so you mentioned, is it 30 hours of classroom time and 6 hours of behind-the-wheel instruction?
That's correct. That's actually a minimum. There are several of our schools that do much more than that.
All right. But I'm just curious about the ratio. I mean, obviously people need to know rules of the road, all that sort of thing, so the classroom time is certainly warranted. But it seems like it might actually be reversed. They'd want to get a lot more time behind the wheel just to know what it feels like and get used to the things that happen when you have a motor vehicle under your control.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with that we would love to have more time behind the wheel. But really what's making the difference in driver education in the last, let's say, decade is a subtle shift from teaching just rules of the road and skills, pushing pedals, turning wheels, and things like that, to actually spending time with the student to teach them about habit development and risk management. If you were to look at today's course compared to 10 years ago, we really are risk management trainers. So we're teaching the student to think about situations, how to prepare themselves to enter situations, and maybe even possibly avoid those situations which would increase hazards and the likelihood of them being in a crash or heaven forbid, in a fatality. So we do spend a lot of time with the student in the classroom going over how to interact with each other. Obviously, as all of us as adults know, driving is very, very social. And so we talk to the student, we show the student, and we let the student spend time with each other in developing those kinds of social graces, if I can say that, in the driving scenario on how to be polite and courteous, how to anticipate potential threats and hazards, and how to respond accordingly. And in that way, they literally increase the economy of traffic safety for all of us when they're out on the road. So we really trust in that classroom time. And, you know, finally, the statistics are really the proof in the pudding. And in the last 10, 11 years, our statistics that we've dropped 62% in the rate of fatalities, citations, and suspensions for the teenagers in Oregon. So those are pretty good numbers for us.
Dropped 62%, you say?
Yeah, 62%.
In 10 years?
In 10 years. Well, it's been about almost 12 years now, okay. But yeah.
All right. And when you say driving is social, that's an interesting statement. I've never heard that before. And you mean car to car, not within the car.
Yes, car to car. It really is like a dance. If you think about it, when you're in a mall, when you're walking with people, there are certain conventions you observe, following too close, getting too close to the sides of somebody. Obviously, we don't walk into the back of someone. It's really very, very similar when you're on the roadways. When you're even on a city street or a freeway, you observe the same kind of social convention. And it's those people that don't observe the conventions that actually raise risk, and they're the ones that we hear about on the 6 o'clock news.
Now, I know you're involved with driver education and all that entails, but and not a psychologist, and that's why I asked this question carefully. But why is it then that we seem so good at handling shopping carts and things like that? Oh, you go ahead. But in a car, it seems like that whole sense of humor and politeness goes away fairly often.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
And in our curriculum, we actually have a video that we show the students, and it's one of those, and I think it was made over in, I think it was in Europe. It's one of those where you wouldn't walk this way. Why do you drive this way? And the difference is, Jeff, that when we're face-to-face with somebody, we can't hide behind the wall or the fortress of the car. We can't be anonymous. And so we have to kind of behave. Otherwise, there's definite direct consequence to our action. And somehow, for some reason, in a car, we feel like that consequence is removed or at least delayed. And so we are more bold and more brazen and eventually higher risk.
Bill Warner is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's with ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation. We're talking about driver education and some changes that come with the new year and changes that have come with driver education more generally over the last dozen years or so. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. About how many programs then are available around the state, schools through which people can get the driver education that allows them to skip the behind-the-wheel test?
Great question. We currently have around 48 providers who run about 157 sites all over the state.
All right. Are they pretty well scattered around the region? Or, I mean, are there parts of the state that are dark?
Well, you know, there are parts that are dark, and we have good representation, of course, down the I-5 corridor in the major cities where we have several providers in each city. But one of the other things that happened to the 1st of January was legislation became active also that recognizing we do have dark areas, and the legislature has allowed us to physically increase the activity and the program, and so we're working real hard now to increase availability of driver education to those darker areas.
How do you go about doing that? I mean, you can't create it yourself, but you have to encourage it to be created, I'm guessing.
That's exactly right. And really, what Oregon driver education is all about, and you just really nailed it, is really incentive. We're not mandated. Driver education is not mandatory, and yet we make it a good program. Our curriculum's not mandatory, and yet we have almost 100% of our providers using our curriculum. Why we incentivize it? We just make it really, really good. We're trying to look in parts of the state now with our adaptive strategies programs, ways that we can increase maybe even providing funding to schools, both public and private, to help them subsidize teachers if that would encourage them to offer driver education. We're just looking into everything and anything we can to get the kids out there who are in the darker areas to be able to have access. We call them the frontier area kids.
Frontier area kids, okay. Yeah. Well, so when we're talking about this process by which passing the Drive Red program gets you to skip the behind-the-wheel test, what is required, though, for those programs to be certified by ODOT? I mean, what do they have to do to get within the confines of this program?
Well, you know, it's really not much that they have to do, except every single instructor in the state of Oregon goes through a training program that my office funds through Western Oregon University. It's the state-approved driving instructor program, and it's basically three courses of training. And basically, once a provider has their instructors go through the program, they're nine-tenths of the way to becoming approved. Basically, it all starts with the actual instructor. Then once the provider has the instructors that are trained by us, and then they follow certain things, you know, how to report for reimbursement. I don't know if you know this or not, but our office actually will reimburse every approved provider up to $210 for every student that they train in the state right now. And we do that in such a way, to hopefully, to encourage them to lower their prices on the parent end so the parents don't have to pay as much.
What is a usual going rate for each student?
Some schools don't charge anything, of course, obviously, if they're in the K-12 system. But we have schools that charge all the way up to around $450 and then anything in between. And that's including the $210 subsidy from ODOT. So if you pay $150, chances are it really costs that program $360. They just got a $210 reimbursement from us to make the difference.
You mentioned a big improvement over the last dozen years in numbers, but just overall, I mean, what's the general picture of the driver education graduate versus the non-driver education graduate out on the road? I mean, they're going to have higher insurance rates, I gather, but what are the general rates for things like accident citations, et cetera?
Well, we had NHTSA came in 2005 and studied Oregon, and then again in
That's the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration?
Yes, thank you for that. You know, we use acronyms so frequently
right.
here. What is it, ILA? You know, I love acronyms. administration came in, and they looked at Oregon, and they looked at us hard, and they looked at our numbers, and they actually compared driver ed kids versus non-driver ed kids, And our GDL, of course, is extremely important in Oregon, and that is a huge factor. But in addition to GDL, the students in driver ed actually performed better all across the board than those students who didn't take driver ed. And so that's really, those are the numbers that we're looking at, and those are the ones that we watch on a daily basis and that we make sure, you know, whatever it is we do. We do a lot of work to prepare the program for everybody in the state, and we constantly reevaluate to make sure that what's being taught and how it's being taught is actually reducing those numbers.
Okay, ILA too, but GDL?
Yeah, graduated driver licensing. Every state in the union now has some kind of a graduated law that allows students to slowly get into fully unsupervised driving, starting with a permitted process and then an intermediate process. Those are things like with the students that get their brand new license at 16 and no parents have to be in the car anymore, but they can't be out in certain hours in the evening. They can't have more than X amount of passengers. Those are things that we do to help students kind of take those first steps without any extra undue influences in their new driving career.
All right, so it's not just Oregon then. It's every state where you spend that time where you get to drive the car by yourself, but not with friends in there.
Correct.
Got it. Let's take some calls here. We have Connie and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about driver education with Bill Warner at ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Good morning. I'm a long-ago person who took driver ed and appreciated it. My question for you is one that I'm a pedestrian bicyclist a lot of the time, and a lot of us refer to all vehicles as deathmobiles. And so, I have a terrible time trying to convince adults, and I'm using that term, from 18 to 80, that every time they get into a moving vehicle, they have the power to kill and injure. And so I wondered how you can get across to young people who have such a high risk feeling and a high risk behavior that every time they get in, they have to think about the fact that they have a loaded gun. You know, they have the power to kill themselves or someone else. How do you get that across?
All right, thanks, Connie. Bill?
Great question. And, where I work at ODOT, we have several program managers. I work right next door to Julie Yip, who's in charge of the bicycle ped program. And we work with folks like the BTA in Portland. We have special components in our state curriculum that specifically address the relationship of the new driver to bicyclists, motorcyclists, pedestrians. We have all kinds of activities and informational videos and even animations that show students how to correctly to deal with those folks. And you're right, it's a growing concern, especially as more and more people take to bicycles and walkways. And so we are right at the front lines teaching the students, especially the novice drivers, how that relationship works.
Bill, when you talk about the videos and animations, it raises the question as a person who's got an 18 and a 17-year-old at home still, boys, that how do you keep the materials relevant and interesting to an age that expects to be able to watch movies on their phones and to be able to blow people away in video games?
You know, I don't think I could really ask for this kind of publicity. This is amazing. We just released a brand new curriculum interface in October, and it literally does that. It shows animations in the classroom. The students can whip out their cell phones, and they can go to QR codes right on the screen with the teacher. It uses their phones. It goes to the current sites that the kids are going to. Our videos are not, some of them are embedded in the curriculum, but some of them are just links so that as the videos get revised and improved and exchanged, the link still takes them to the place where the content is, but the newer video will be shown. So you're absolutely correct. We can't expect the students to look at something that was made 10 years ago and connect with it in any way.
We will take a couple more minutes here with Bill Warner from ODOT. We're talking about driver education programs and changes in state laws as of the first of the year that allow people who are taking driver education courses to go ahead and skip the road test to get that first driver's license. 800-838-3760, our main number in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bill Warner.
Hi, folks. I think you should provide a driving experience that encompasses out-of-control driving. We can sit here all day long and talk about a cold shower, but until you are in one, you don't know what you've said. And all your driving experience is in controlled, legal driving. You're not getting the experience of, whoops, I should have been going 10 miles an hour slower on this corner. And until you experience some of those situations, you're not actually a driver. These situations crop up, and I wish we could have a fleet of, if they get wrecked, oh well, cars, and let people experience out-of-control driving. When we were kids, we had mud running in orchards and other illegal activities that gave us a bit of that experience. But driving legally and driving out of control are two separate things. Jump into that cold shower. Otherwise, you don't know what you're doing.
All right. Interesting concept. Thanks for that, Grumpy John. Bill, what kinds of let's talk about the road tests that kids in driver education get then. Are there circumstances in which they are encouraged to go a little faster than the speed limit or something just so they can see what it feels like on closed courses I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, we actually don't do that. I'm kind of thinking that I'd like to talk to Grumpy John after the show and see if he wouldn't like to take the training and become an instructor, that kind of passion. But what we do with the kids is we don't put them in situations that are either unlawful or risky because those situations happen automatically anyway through the training. We could talk to you about the experiences of some of our educators across the state, and boy, do they have great stories to tell you. So that happens a lot anyway in the program. There's a lot of the dynamic in there that the out of control. Although it really isn't out of control with an instructor with them, but the ability to get there fast is impressed upon the students. So when we're working with students, everything that we do in the car has first been done in the classroom, and I'll give you that. We have animations and videos. We talk about vehicle balance and vehicle dynamics and how even something as simple as adding two passengers to a pickup truck can change the complete dynamics, changing it from one person to three persons in a truck on a corner. And we show how that works and everything. Do we go out there in a truck then with loaded down with students and take a corner real fast and hope we don't tip over? No, but we do take them through exercises that give them the idea of kind of the sprinkle. If it wasn't going to be a completely cold shower, we do sprinkle them with cold water. Hopefully it wakes them up a little bit within the confines of what you can do in a state-approved course as far as, you know, what's allowed for risk management.
When we talk about the minimums of 30 hours of classroom time and 6 hours of behind-the-wheel instruction, I mean, they are alternated, I would assume, so it's not like you get all 30 hours of classroom time and then you're behind-the-wheel time, right?
That was another big change. It used to be that you took all the classroom during the school year, and then in the summers everybody jumped in cars. And currently, In our state, we don't allow that anymore. It's called concurrency. So they learn a little bit, they go out and drive with a professional instructor, and then hopefully before their next lesson, they go with their folks and do practice a little bit some more. Then they go to the classroom, learn a little bit more, then go out into the instructor, and so the cycle continues.
All right, so 6 hours behind the wheel, but I mean, for a learner's permit, you have to put in something like 50 hours, don't you?
Well, not for the learner's permit. You can get the learner's permit if you're just good at taking the test.
That's
but when
I mean,
you take that learner's permit and 50 hours with your parents and driver education, you can get a license.
All right. And so you talked about the certification of the teachers in the program at Western Oregon University in Monmouth. Is there retraining? I mean, are they required to go back for continuing education at some point?
Yeah. All of the teachers in our state are required to maintain 15 hours of continuing education every 2 years, and we provide all kinds of opportunities. Through Chemeketa Community College, we have an online course that any instructor can take from anywhere in the state for their online. We also offer conferences every 6 months. There's the teachers of the state have an association called ODSEA. They provide a conference in October, and then every March, ODOT provides a conference. So every 6 months, there's opportunities for growth and development. In fact, the one in March has grown that we actually have now 4 states worth of instructors coming to it. We had over 300 people last year at can't think of the name of the hotel at the airport, but it was a big one.
So, Bill, before we go, for people who are not putting a kid through a driver's ed course, what's the single most important thing to teach a young person on the road?
If you're not going to put them through driver education, then the number one thing I would really teach any kid is basically just when in doubt, slow it down. So many things would be different if a student could give themselves just some more time until experience can take over.
All right. Well, obviously a lot to talk about here. Well, actually, we do have time for one last little question, which is how much are you incorporating discussion of cell phones and texting in driver education now, too?
Well, obviously, it's a bad thing. We don't do it. We don't let the kids have the cell phones in the cars in practice. Hopefully, the modeling that we don't want in the cars in real life. We go from there.
All right. Bill Warner is with the Oregon Department of Transportation. We've been talking about driver education and changes that came with the first of the year. Bill, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to have you. And we will take a short break here in the Jefferson Exchange and return with Garrison Keillor in the Writer's Almanac. Back in a minute 5.